Cape Talk DIY.
Now, Mr. DIY himself, Angelo, is away traveling, but he has very kindly organized an expert guest to join us today to talk about water reticulation. It's a great pleasure to welcome Johnny Walker from J. Walker Plumbing to the studio. Great to have you with us, Johnny. Thanks for popping in.
Hi, thanks, Pippa. Yes, thanks for having me.
And before I tell you a little bit more about who he is and what his company is all about, just a reminder to you that obviously that means we are talking water reticulation and plumbing issues today. If you have a question, excuse me, in that field, give us a call on 021-446-0567. You're also very welcome to send your SMSs to 31567 or to leave a voice note on 072-567-1567. Tell us a little bit about the business, Johnny. How long have you been in this trade?
So my business commenced in 2009, so I've been going for about 10 years now. Mm-hmm. Been in the game for about 15, obviously doing my apprenticeship prior. So yeah, it's been a steady little growth, which has helped me to expose myself into meeting a lot of people to help me along the way.
Okay. And particular areas of specialty, when we talk about water reticulation, that's a pretty broad field. Do you specialize in any one aspect of it?
No, well, we do large-scale water reticulations. Mm-hmm. We do domestic water reticulations. We do designs. So when a client comes to us with a house, then we'll spec the size of the piping that's required to fit the amount of the volume, the requirements, the bathrooms, the sizing, and everything like that. Yeah.
Okay. It strikes me that maybe we should start with the most obvious question, which is if you can explain for somebody who doesn't really understand the term, what you mean by water reticulation.
So water reticulation is basically a network of a piping system from your entry point being the council, reticulating into the household or the building, running to what we do now is we run a main water supply running to a geyser. From the geyser, then we distribute to all the draw off points and in a balanced scenario. And then obviously which will then provide you with the hot and the cold water supplies throughout the household.
Okay. Now that means if something goes wrong, if I'm understanding correctly, if something goes wrong in that system, if it happens anywhere beyond that point at which you connect to the council supply, it's the individual homeowner's responsibility to deal with it. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned a balanced pressure system. What does that mean?
So a balanced pressure system is you would run a mains line, a council feed. Main pressure, normally about, can be anything from 8 bar straight to your geyser, where you would install then a PRV, which would then reticulate back to the draw-off points at a balanced pressure. So your hot and your cold would effectively be the same pressure.
Okay.
However, we do tend to like to have the garden taps on a mains pressure system, so you don't have a reduced flow there for irrigation purposes. But yeah, the old school way was... before that, the mains would always be stronger, so they would run a main water line under the building, teeing up to your cold water points, and then your geyser would come down, which would then, obviously, you would have a problem with mixing and blending issues in the showers. So that's what people find. But obviously, the new school way, we balance everything.
Okay, so that explains a whole lot about the number of times we get the question about the hot water coming through very slowly at a much slower rate than the cold water. If somebody's living in a house that's got that old system, is there any way to sort of retrofit a fix for it, or do you just have to live with it?
Yes, there's a few little ways. The best way I always see is to try and install a pressure-reducing valve at the closest before it enters the house. That way you're guaranteed to balance everything, but obviously you've got to be careful on the rating of the pressure for your geyser. You obviously can't, you know, if your geyser's only 100 kPa, you don't really want to reduce your pressure to 100 kPa at the entrance of the house, because then everything's going to be very low. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so it's definitely something you need expert help on. That much is very clear. Okay, so the first question is already through from Peter on the WhatsApp line. Peter, thank you so much for your message. Peter says, my geyser has been installed now for about 10 years. How can I get a sacrificial anode? Or here, can I get a sacrificial anode? I think there might be an autocorrect happening there.
Mm-hmm.
And which is more efficient, vertical or horizontal installation? Let's start with the vertical versus horizontal before we talk about the anode.
So a vertical installation is more efficient as the water rises and sits a lot higher. So you're utilizing a lot more of your cylinder. So when you're drawing off water, you have a much higher capacity of hot water at for your draw-off points, yeah.
Okay, so you would always then recommend vertical.
If there's a space, if you can, in the space that you've got, yes.
Okay, obviously that's always going to be a factor.
And that's always the MBR,
yeah.
Exactly.
So if somebody has got one that is currently installed horizontally and they feel there is the space to put it to shift it, is it possible to shift it off?
It is, yeah, it is. But, I mean, it's not all that necessary to go through that extra expense to shift it vertically, but if you're doing a new insulation, if you can get it vertically mounted, like in the garage, for instance, then you can get, yeah, that's a better call.
Okay, all right. Thanks, Peter. Now, Peter also mentions the sacrificial anode. I know,
yes,
this is one that we often get asked about because they can be replaced, not so, and they,
yes,
need to be replaced,
yes,
quite regularly.
So they should be replaced, especially in the steel geysers, every 2 years or so. So there's a special pocket for that, especially on the QuickHot and the HeatTech geysers. So it is good, advisable to hold the warranties to do that. But the copper geysers, they also don't generally have sacrificial, you know, so it depends which ones you, which geyser you have.
Okay. Some really interesting questions coming through here from all kinds of different geyser scenarios. In particular, Joy in Rondebosch has a geyser which has been off for 7 years now and wonders what are the risk implications?
No risk. Obviously, it might be advisable to drain the geyser if the water might probably stagnated.
Yeah.
So to do a service and then just to check the elements and the thermostat, and most likely the gasket as well would probably need a swap out. Definitely drain that geyser.
Can you imagine what's sitting in that geyser after 7 years? That's Okay. So check the element, the thermostat.
And the gasket.
And the gasket.
Yeah, that would need to handle, yeah, so just do a general service.
Okay, Joy, and thanks for your question. Right, let's talk about electricity consumption by the geysers, and I don't know if this is within your field of oversight, but this person says, my geyser chows 2 kilowatts of electricity for an hour when I switch it on. Is that a lot? Because I can't afford to waste that much electricity. The geyser is 40 years old and is gravity fed.
2 kilowatts has probably got a 2 kilowatt element, so that's normal. Obviously, if you're switching your geyser on from when it's cold, it's gonna use a lot of power just to get that to a temperature, the desired temperature. So unfortunately, yeah, it's gonna draw power, that 2 kilowatts.
Is it better, in your opinion? I know there are some people who prefer to turn the geyser off for certain hours of the day and then switch it back on when needed.
So
is that the optimal operating?
Yeah, that's a bit of a debate amongst plumbers, and I personally don't feel that's the best option, purely because you do need your geyser to reach a 60-degree temperature to prevent any to prevent that environment for waterborne diseases such as Legionella. So in my opinion, I would rather go for like a timer where you can at least get the geyser up to a 60-degree mark during the course of a day, just to buffer it, just to get that 60-degree to kill any bacteria growth that may occur. It doesn't really impact your isolator at the geyser or anything like that, but that's just from a safety and SANS regulation, that is.
Okay, that's a really important thing you've mentioned. Thank you so much. Here's an interesting question about sort of the bigger picture. What's up from somebody wondering how water goes up to the top of a tall high-rise building? What sort of reticulation system required for something on that scale?
So hot water
generally, I assume so, yeah.
Well, hot water generally rises, but in a building it would depend obviously on council pressure outside, and if the pressure on the outside doesn't meet the requirement to get to a high-rise building, we would have to install, well, someone would have to install a pump set just to accommodate that pressure, and so you'd have a booster set to get to the tanks on the roof or whatever the case may be.
Okay, so for a
especially now with the drought and everything that's recently happened, a lot of the council has reduced pressure. So there have been a lot of buildings and reported cases where water's not getting to the top floors.
Gosh.
So that's hence why pumps and things like that needed to be installed, yeah.
Okay. Gosh, I'm just imagining how strong the pump must have to be to service
a skyscraper, for example. Yeah, specifically designed, yeah, by flows and things.
Interesting question. Thank you, whoever it was who asked it. Okay, Johnny, I'm going to ask you to pop the headphones on because we've got David on the line from Constantia with a question. Good afternoon, David.
Ah, yes. Thanks, Bava, for taking the call. I just want to find out, I had last year in March my bathroom overall redone completely. And now this week I discovered that I've got a leak that's coming from, you know, from where they installed the taps. Mm-hmm. Do I have any recourse to go back to the company and say it's not, it's a well-known company, that they have to repair that? What is you know,
yes.
What is the norm in your industry?
Yes, well, generally each company would probably have their own warranty on the job. So, say, given it's a new installation, a 12-month guarantee on workmanship, and yes, and I would believe they should honour that and come back and rectify the issue.
I'm outside that period now. As I said, it was done in March, April last year.
Okay.
And well, now, as I said, now we're in August, and I just want to know what the can I insist?
Yeah, you can try and phone them, and maybe it's a fact of goodwill. They can come out and assist you. But, you know, they'd have to. What I would do is just to have a look at it and ascertain why is it leaking. Is it workmanship? Is it a material default? Something like that. That's what I would recommend.
Okay, so that might impact on whether it's something that they would be prepared to put right after the
expiration. And just try and diagnose exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so David, it sounds like the first thing to do is call back the plumbers who did that job and ask them to come and inspect the situation. And I hope that they do assist you in putting it right. Thank you for your call. A reminder that you can phone in on 021-446-0567 with your water reticulation and plumbing issues today. My guest in studio with us is Johnny Walker from J. Walker Plumbing. And gosh, the questions are coming in thick and fast. Let's go to the WhatsApp line. Corinne says, we use water out of a geyser that is always switched off for brushing our teeth, etc. Is that potentially harmful?
Not necessarily if you're not drinking it, I wouldn't say, but it's not advisable. It depends if it's a closed system. Is it a high pressure system or a low pressure system? Generally, I mean, if it's a low pressure system, sometimes there are no lids on the roofs. If it's a gravity system, sometimes you can get rodents and stuff climbing inside.
Okay.
So it depends on the type of geyser that you got. So just do take a bit of care there.
You don't want to be brushing the teeth with rat water. Yes. Yeah. Oh, that's a lovely thought you've just planted in our minds. Thank you very much. Anna in Athlone currently has a 150-liter geyser and wants to change to a 50-liter. Is it an easy changeover, she asks, or is special additional plumbing required?
No, it's a pretty straightforward swap, eh?
Yeah. Okay, that's good news, yeah. Anna. Thanks so much. Right, this is from somebody, it's anonymous, saying, when I go away for 3 months, I turn my geyser off at the circuit board. Is this okay and safe? My geyser is set at 55, not 60 degrees. Is that also okay?
As I mentioned before, I recommend setting it up to 60 degrees as per the SANS requirements. 55 is all right, but you just want to make sure that you're not running the risk of bacteria growth in your geyser. But if you're switching it on and off, rather just, you know, at least twice, three times a week, just let that geyser run full. So at least you know that you're getting your geyser to temperature.
And if you're away overseas for 3 months and can't do that?
Yeah, then you can just switch the geyser off, no problem. And then when you come back, just leave it on for some time. Yeah.
Okay, and switching it off at the circuit board versus switching it off at the point of the installation, is there a benefit either way?
No, I don't see any problems.
As long as it's off. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Right, let's go back to the lines. Terry is calling in from Durbanville. Terry, good to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Hi, Pepper. How are you?
Well, thanks, and yourself?
Yeah, well, as well. Listen, I want a question. Why do we put geysers in the roof? I mean, I work in the solar industry, and every host in South Africa, 90% of them have geysers in the roof, where overseas, Canada, America, and other European countries, they have them downstairs in a boiler room, and they pump the water up and around the house. Because here we have geysers bursting continuously, flooding roofs, flooding houses, and insurance companies don't seem to worry about it. They just keep paying out. But it causes such chaos when your geyser bursts, or a plumber put it in wrong and it starts leaking or something. Any idea why we can't have geysers in the garage and just have the water flowing up into the house?
Sorry. It's a really interesting question, Terry. Any thoughts, Johnny?
Yes, no, Terry, I do agree with you. You know, that was an older way that we in South Africa has always been conducted our installations. However, on the new installations, generally, we like to offer the garage as an alternative or an outside. Or, you know, when we do solar installations, you do it on the roof so that the geyser doesn't cause any havoc. But obviously, being in the roof, you just need to make sure that there's the drip trays in place and there's falls, the correct fall going to the outside. Obviously, it's a pressurized system, so anything else could go wrong. You're quite right, and it does run a risk factor.
It's a really interesting comment, Terry. Thanks for making it. I know some people would automatically go, I don't want anything outside that could potentially be stolen. Do you ever hear of geysers being stolen that have been installed outside?
Yes, it obviously does run a risk because copper pipes are quite valuable, and you can't tube your geyser without copper. Unfortunately, that's a regulation. 2 meters around your geyser, you can't use your PEX or multi-layer piping. So
it
does run a risk, correct.
Okay, so that could be part of the explanation, Terry, so that why we don't do it now, that there is a theft, a fear of theft. Okay, right, onto solar geysers. A WhatsApp from someone who has a two-year-old solar geyser and says the hot water is not coming through. Could it be a faulty water meter to blame?
No, is the water not, is it hot water only?
Hot water not coming through is the comment.
So hot water, I would check your first thing in point of is just check your aerators, check the PRV is not blocked for any sediment buildup, and just to make sure there's no obstructions.
Okay, but unlikely to be a water meter issue.
Your on-site assessment would most likely be optimal.
Okay. Another common question that we get every time we talk plumbing is to do with hammering pipes. What causes that hammering noise in pipes and how do you fix it?
Yes, so that's a water hammer. It's a strange phenomenon, but it's a series of things. It can relate to the smallest thing being a tap washer that's and the seating of the tap is pushing against the body of the tap. It can be your a stopcock in the roof, which also plays a havoc on the master flow 2 cartridges and the PRVs. There's a series of things, and it's obviously the most obvious, which I always try and tell the clients, is to check your toilet bore valves, because the rubber in the toilet can also cause a shattering through the plumbing system. So there's a various amount of things that can relate to that. But if it's quite involved and you tried everything, then you can get water hammer arresters, which you can stick online in your pipe system to absorb the shock and try. That's
really?
Last point of call though.
Okay, as a last resort, as a matter of interest, how expensive are those?
They're quite pricey, about $800, and then about an hour labor, 2 hours labor, I'd say.
Okay,
so you're looking at about $1,500, I would say, something.
To install those as a last resort. Okay.
Yeah, as an absolute last.
You said check the toilet bore valves. Okay.
Yeah, I think generally the bore valves in the toilet, there's a little rubber, little washer there that on the old float systems that cause problems through the system. It's common.
Now, a question, because certainly if I think of our house, the toilet systems are not being opened as often as they used to be because of the drought. We've become accustomed to collecting water in the shower and using buckets, etc. So there is not as much flow of water through the cistern system than there used to be in the past. Is that a problem? Is it something we should be checking out every few months and deliberately pouring a bucket of water down there? Or
No, I don't think that plays a role. What does cause a bit of havoc though on toilet cisterns is these little things that you deposit inside the cistern. Mm-hmm. You know, with those cleaning agents, they can deteriorate the washers.
Really?
And also there's some people decide also to put bricks in there and water bottles inside the cisterns, which doesn't really help, because you can actually adjust the bore valve and the float to accommodate the volume of water that you want in your system.
Okay, hang on. We've got to say that again, because we are always being told put a brick in the system to reduce the amount of water.
Really,
is that total nonsense?
Yeah, you don't need to do that. And it clutters up the system. It can cause issues on the components. And all you have to do is arrange a plumber to come out and you just adjust the desired level that you require. So on the bore valve, you can actually adjust it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I've definitely learned something new today. Right. If you'll pop the headphones back on, Johnny, we've got a voice note question that's come through. Let's take a listen.
Hello, Leslie here. I have induction heaters at 2 sites in my house, 1 kitchen area, 1 bathroom area, and they're quite old. One of them has now gone, it's broken. They're AEGs. Now, I don't know whether to replace them, to replace it, or whether to go back to a geyser. I had a geyser, not in my house, but in an outside room, but it took so long for the water to get hot to go from that outside room into the house that we thought that it would save electricity by using these induction heaters. Any comment on that? Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Leslie.
We don't specialize too much in the induction heaters, but what I would recommend is just replacing the AGs with an instantaneous type system. However, they're quite demand specific, so you may have to upgrade your power supply to the instantaneous to keep up with the demand, especially if you've got baths and things like that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good luck, Leslie. Thanks for your question. Right. Unita has a problem on the WhatsApp line saying the water from the hot water tap takes so long to warm up. I am catching the water all the time, but can anything be done about it?
Yeah, so that's also a common problem, especially if the geyser's located central to the bathrooms. And in this instance, it sounds like the kitchen is quite far away. The run is quite far from the geyser, so the water does take some distance to travel. What we recommend in that scenario is to install an undercounter geyser, a little holding tank, as it were, a little 10-liter. And what we do is we run the hot water into that undercounter geyser, and then you'll instantly have 10 liters of hot water. And by the time the water has come through from your geyser, you'll have hot water. So it's a lot more energy efficient. And especially on those long runs, I always recommend insulating the hot line with lagging.
Okay.
So that retains the heat in the pipe system as well, saving energy and everything else. Yeah.
Okay. I know my folks have installed one of those little undercounter geysers. So it's been an absolute game changer.
Yes, 100%. Yeah. I mean, instant water. And then by the time your geysers run to your sink, it's filling the geyser at the same time.
But it makes a lot of sense to remind everybody that sometimes it is an issue of physical distance away from the source of
correct.
The hot water.
Yeah,
simple
as
that.
It's part of design, really. Yes.
Okay. Right. Another voice note to take a listen to. Let's hear that one.
All right, Papa, just a quick question. Coming back to that guy about asking about putting hot water cylinders inside buildings, comparing South Africa to Northern America and also to the Northern Europe. Just a quick question. What is the average winter temperatures in those parts of the world? As far as I know, it's like minus 40. So if you were to put a geyser in the roof in those environments, it would cause major crack. And therefore, beginning of spring, you'd need a new geyser. I have a feeling that they do it here is because most of your pipework runs through the roof. Therefore, it makes plumbing a lot easier. And it also is out of the way for people to fiddle with and that kind of stuff.
That's a fair point. And possibly also there's a safety perspective to consider, that it's out the way where it's not going to be fiddled with or touched by kids, etc.
Sure. And what he does refer to, the extreme temperatures does play havoc, especially on our system. I mean, wintertime is definitely a time where geysers we find are bursting. I think that's because of the expansion and contraction that happens inside the geysers during the colder months. So, I don't think those geysers would work out in those extreme conditions. Yeah, but in the geyser, definitely out of sight. It does, from a safety point of view. Yeah.
Okay, fair point. Thank you so much for the voice note. For the last few months, says Elise on the SMS line, we can only get one bath full of water, 80 litres, before the water turns cold. And this is from a 150-litre geyser. I hope you're not bathing too often, Elise, but 80 litres of hot water and then nothing more. What would explain that?
So, 150-liter geyser is not really designed for a big bath, for instance. Yeah. I mean, 80 liters is already half of the capacity of the hot water geyser. And you've got to remember that the geysers only affect efficiently hot at the midway. Below the midway point, your water's only about 45 degrees. So, you're utilizing your 55 or 60 degrees, and then the water will start cooling quite rapidly. And then obviously not giving your desired bath temperature. So what I recommend is maybe going for a 200-liter geyser. Then you'd have more than sufficient water for a bath.
And of course, we're not supposed to be having long, deep baths.
Yeah, that's
so,
also the point. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
But the fact that she says for the last few months this has been happening suggests that something has changed. Can you think of anything that would cause that to change?
No, maybe someone's adjusted your thermostat. Maybe increase the thermostat to a higher temp. That would that would also increase the mid range below the halfway mark to a higher temperature as well, giving you more efficiency. If you had to adjust it to 65 degrees, you would definitely have a hotter, bigger bath.
Okay. Now, a lot of people are worried about what they heard you saying about bacteria in the water. Several people asking me to repeat and asking follow-up questions. So let's just tackle it via this question. Somebody's saying on the WhatsApp, we have a heat pump on a holiday house and the installer / product manual advises that it be set at 53 degrees and no higher. Is this an issue, Ray, the formation of bacteria? You mentioned 60 degrees is the recommended level that will certainly kill Legionnaire's disease and other nasty bacteria.
Sixty degrees is the SANS regulation requirement.
Okay.
Heat pumps can only really get up to 55. I don't see a problem. It's not like a high risk. It's just as part of regulation that what we prefer. There haven't been reported cases. I mean, Legionella is, for instance, it's just something you breathe in. It's not really, you can't drink it, so it's not going to be a problem. But just from an added safety point, as per regulations, you want it to be 60 degrees.
So if you can,
so heat pumps, there's nothing wrong with the heat pump. I mean, it's 53 degrees is fine, but yeah.
Okay, we have got through so much ground today. Thank you so much. Not ground, piping, I suppose I should say, would be the better term. Johnny, I'd like to leave our listeners with your contact details. If we didn't get to their question today and they'd like to reach out to you, how do they contact Jay Walker Plumbing?
Yeah, so we have a website. It's www.jwplumbing.co.za. You can also email the office. It's info@jwplumbing.co.za. And yeah, our telephone number is 021-788-1563.
Right, and I've jotted those numbers down, so if you're driving and didn't catch them, please feel free to drop me an email and I'll gladly pass them along. Johnny, great to have you with us today. Thanks so much for your help.
Thanks so much, Pippa. Awesome.
Johnny Walker of JW Plumbing.